Listen and engage. The Drex Radio Show, weeknights 7 to 10 on KGO 810.
Hello Friday.
Hello Friday. Is that wishful thinking, Karen Reed? Okay. All righty. Well, after last night's game, I really wish it was Friday. Right? We feel like we want it to be Friday today. All right, but it is Monday, and that means career coach time with Marty Nemko, martynemko.com. All things career related that you'd ever need to know and more on his website. Marty, thank you very much for joining me.
My pleasure. Well, at least if it's not Friday, you have the additional penalty of being stuck with me. That's really must make it really
good.
Well,
no, it's good. And you know what? I wanted to run something by you that came across my desk today. It said if you're not taking vacation days because you think it'll hurt your career, you're wrong. A new survey found that you're more likely to get a raise if you take at least 11 vacation days per year.
Well, it does surprise me. You know, whenever a study defies common sense, I trust the common sense. Like, for example, they used to say that parents should ignore children whose bad behavior, and you should only reward positive things, you know, even if it's something small like, oh, you're sitting so nicely, Johnny. It doesn't make sense. It made sense to me that people are going to respond better to punishments for bad things as well as rewards for good. So when somebody tells me your career is better if you take more vacation days, you know, I don't see so much, you know, restorative effect of the vacation, because people end up being so stressed a few days before vacation, trying to get ready to go on vacation, and then the vacation very often is stressful because you get delays and all this other stuff. Then you come back in and catch up. It doesn't make sense to me that if you're taking more vacation days, gee, you take more vacation days, I think we're going to boost your career. Doesn't pass my common sense test.
Well, Marty, maybe you might agree with me. The best vacation is a staycation.
Oh, do I ever.
Look,
because then you don't have the hassles.
Right.
When I take, I mean, there are staycations that can range from anything from 1 minute to 4 days. So I have 1 minute staycations all the time. I pet my doggy. I will get on the floor, and my doggy gets on me, and he will lick my face, and that is totally restorative in 1 minute for free, no travel time, no hassle. Or if I want to go away for the weekend with my wife, it can be a real simple drive down to Carmel. I'm very fortunate. One of my clients has a lovely condo in Carmel. We stay there, come back the next day, and we've got almost no hassle, no nothing, almost no cost. Staycations, short vacations at the house, going to see local movies or whatever. I am a huge fan, in agreement with you, of staycations.
Yeah, why? I'm all about the non-hassle. I'm not down with the hassle in the airports and all of that stuff. One of the things I wanted to discuss with you, you know, as a career counselor, you say just pick something already.
If it's one thing I've learned, I've had over 5,000 clients at this point over 30 years. And when I started out, I was like your typical career counselor, said, let's really inventory your skills and your interests and your values and personality and see what can fit and if we can dovetail it with the market. And let's wait until something really fits right. And so you can follow your passion and do what you love and the money will follow and all that other crap. And in reality, having 5,000 clients later, I have come to the conclusion that most people could be very happy in a wide range of careers. Not everything. I mean, I can't fix a toilet. I can't fix anything. I can barely change a light bulb. But within a broad range, it'd be wiser after a few weeks of exploration to pick something, because people wait for the career to descend like manna from heaven. And what happens is they end up waiting for Godot. They wait forever. And in the meantime, tick-tock, the clock is passing. They're not getting the training. They're not making any money. They're being a barista. They're hanging out with people. You know, do you know how many people I know who work in restaurants? They work till 2 in the morning, and then what do restaurant people do when the restaurant closes? They get drunk together. It is not exactly a career launch pad. So I urge people very quickly to pick something and get on with it, because you'll find that if you go all the way with it and you make yourself the go-to guy or go-to girl by being focused, you could be happier and more successful in a wide range of careers than if you wait for the dream, quote-unquote, career to descend.
Yeah, you should have some gut instinct feeling at some point in your life what that is. And I'm sure you would agree that's where you should put your focus.
If there are some people who get that gut feeling, at age 12, they know they want to be computer game designers. At age 14, they say, oh, my God, I know I want to be a fashion model. Oh, I know I want to do this. But most people don't have that orgasm about any one career. You know how many clients with me, you know, I'm interested in a lot of things, but no one thing really stands out. And that's true for most people. And so the key there is to not expect that if by the time you reach age 18, let alone, or 28 or 38 or 48, if you haven't had something come, if one career hasn't bubbled up to the top, it's much more likely that one will not bubble up, no matter how much time, no matter how many times you visit the guru at the mountaintop in Nepal, that you're unlikely to find something that's going to be that much better than what you could come up with after just a few weeks. Dear listeners, I would encourage you to circle a day on your calendar, 1 month, 2 months out, and between now and then, watch YouTube videos of various careers. Think about all the careers you've previously considered. Do a little reading, maybe go to a career library. Do something. Read my book, Cool Careers for Dummies, which has little one-paragraph profiles of 500 careers, and then pick something. End of story.
Here's another interesting one. According to a new survey, 36% of people hate their job, and 10% of the people say the career that they picked was the biggest regret of their life.
10%. What about the majority? Most people liking or not liking their career are not a function of the career. Let's say that Drex.
Well, they say job. They say job. So I think there's a difference between a job and a career. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you choose a job where you've got a miserable boss, or it's unethical, or the pay is crap, or you've got increasingly here in the Bay Area, the transportation planners have deemed it that they're going to force us out of our cars, so we've got people making two-hour commutes from Antioch to San Francisco or from San Jose to San Francisco, that's going to make anybody crazy. So, of course, it's a mistake to take a job that has a horrible commute, a horrible boss. And I beg you, again, dear listeners, I'm talking not to Drex, I'm talking to you now. When you are interviewing, you are not there for the inquisition. You are on a first date. You're both checking each other out. Ask them questions. Say, what makes you different from a boss than others? When you get offered the job, don't just say, oh, I'm so excited, or I'm pleased. Can I come and visit the workplace so we can negotiate terms? And while you're there, you catch the vibe in the office and see if people look miserable. You hang out in the break room. You ask people, I know you're not going to bare your soul here, but, you know, I've just been offered a job here. Could you tell me what it's really like to work here? Watch their faces. They may say, oh, it's very good here. They may say that, but the tone of voice tells you it's not. You check them out like they check you out, and you will be less likely to make that disastrous decision about a job. And in terms of a career, you don't need to be that perfectionistic. It's more a matter of what you do in the career than which career you choose.
You're right on. I have to tell you, so I had an interview several years ago, and I really wanted to work at this place, and I went out with the manager, and we did this dance. And I walked away, and I said to myself, there is no way I'm working for that dude.
Right.
No way.
Right.
Yeah. He did one of these. He goes, if you look around this restaurant, can you tell me 20 stories about what's going on? And I thought to myself, dude, you're done.
Wrong question for the kind of thing. What was the job you were going to be doing?
Radio. Yeah.
Okay.
He said, there's 100 stories in this restaurant, as if I'm a dumbass and I don't know that. But he says, why don't you pick out about 10 or 20 and tell me a story?
Said, yeah, there is a risk when interviewers are playing gotcha too much. It does suggest that they're a little power hungry and expecting maybe too much what they call ideational fluency. That may have been too tough a question even for a great talk show host.
Well, no, I have to tell you something. I agree with you. It is a dance. It is a date. You know, just as you are being interviewed, you should be interviewing just what you just said. You should be interviewing them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a compatibility thing.
Right, right. You can walk out of there and say, you know what, this isn't it.
Yep, exactly. And it's, for another, let's just take that particular example. A different type of talk show host, not better, not worse, just different, might have relished that challenge and might have gone after told some of those stories. And that person would have been more compatible with that boss and might have gotten along well. That was clearly rubbing you the wrong way, and therefore it was a sign of your incompatibility. So many job seekers are so worried about how they're coming off that they don't think about anything other than, am I looking good? Am I sounding stupid? Am I going to be embarrassed? Oh my God, what if they ask about the gap in my employment? Instead, you've got to be able to at least leave part of your attention to evaluating them.
Them. Amen. On that note, we'll take a break, and we'll be back with more of Marty Nemko, our career coach, in just a minute.
Drex on the next generation of KGO 810.
Stay.
It's Drex the Radio Show time on KGOA 10 as the sun sets, now live across all of the Western United States. I guess today's the longest day of the year, isn't it, Marty Nemko? Summer solstice?
Yeah, but it feels quite short. You know, I always enjoy talking with you. We have such lovely conversations. It feels like it's a short day. It's flying by.
I wish I was at Stonehenge this year. Have you ever been to Stonehenge?
No, but again, like I said, I'm a staycation guy.
Oh, I know, but it
Stonehenge,
was just...
I've barely been to San Francisco.
That's it. I love you for saying that. Yeah, I've worked here in a year and a half. I haven't seen it yet either, but I'm in it. Okay, let's move along. Well, it's true. I mean, you know, it's hard to get in and out of here, so I do my thing and I go
home.
Right.
It's bizarre.
Like,
you got to take a day off to cross the Bay Bridge.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about, and you write about this, lie-telling at work. That's right, L-I-E. Lying.
Oh, my God. They're unfortunately, you know, everybody is ever more worried that somebody's going to take their job from them or it's going to be offshored or whatever. And so there's a lot of lie-telling, especially around if they think there's deep pockets involved. And this is a story that just happened recently, at a client. This was this person is a foreman in a highly regarded car maker's factory, not in the Bay Area, long distance person, and he was accused of creating a hostile environment, and he was shocked because he absolutely didn't. He said to me, you know, I wasn't there, I don't know, but he vigorously denied it. But he had to go through an incredible amount of interrogation with lawyers all over the place, and the company had to pay a fortune in legal fees, And in the workplace, you know, the men and women were extremely cautious. And then it was found out that the person who said that he was harassing had concocted it and had recruited two of her coworkers to substantiate her claim by offering to split the settlement with them.
Oh, my God.
But fortunately, one of them felt guilty for a moment, admitted it, and that's it. So, you know, especially when deep pockets, you're working for a large company or the government where everybody, the workers are, you know, they say, oh, man, am I going to really be this wage slave for a million years? Hey, maybe I could sue. We got race and just discrimination. We got sexual orientation. We got a hostile environment. We got or it doesn't have to be even that bad. It could be, you know, there's a promotion coming up and my coworkers. Gee, if I could go and sabotage that coworker and just kind of quietly spread some rumors, maybe I'll get the promotion. So, frankly, lying is not so uncommon in the workplace.
Yeah, I guess not, because everybody's concerned about their own back. But who likes to work in that kind of environment?
Especially if it's
a hostile environment. I mean, you know.
California. I've found since I haven't lived here my whole life. I've lived here for a long time, but I have found that the Bay Area people are among the most sophisticated at hiding what they're really feeling. They are really good at being pleasant and really good at smiling. And then sometimes you see that the same person who's smiling and nice to your face behind the back is stabbing you. So you know, I remember the old show Hill Street Blues.
Yes.
Right, and the guy Phil Lesterhouse was the sergeant. He was supervised a bunch of cops, and the last thing he would always say is, "Hey, let's be careful out there. You know, it's not an easy world out there. It's pretty tough times. Even though the ostensible unemployment rate is 5%, there's a hell of a lot of people who don't have good jobs, and you got to be careful out there." That's part of why I'm on this show, to help people be careful out there.
You're right on the money. Let me tell you my observation since I've been back here going on 2 years now is people are passive aggressive. And it's exactly what you said. They will smile to your face and stab you right in the back. I don't know what it is about this place. Maybe it's the competition. Maybe it's because we're the center of the universe tech-wise. I don't know the extreme competitive nature of everything. It just is like that. I've never worked in a place where it is so pleasant, but you got to watch your ass.
Yeah. I think some of it is, you know, the Bay Area has the highest percentage of college-educated people. So you have a lot of smart people. They're smart enough to be devious. You know, if you're in a, let's just say, a city or a town not known for its intellectual firepower, you know, you don't have the smarts to be quite that clever. Where here you got a lot of smart people, and a place like KGO or a biotech company or a high tech company or a university's worst of all, you got all these brilliant PhDs, And they're all fighting for prestige and limited resources. And so you just particularly have to be careful in such a highly educated place as the Bay Area.
Wow, that must be a nightmare when you talk about it like that. The PhDs and the tech companies, where they're all geniuses.
Yeah, you do have to be careful. I am really, just a personal statement, I am so grateful to be self-employed. I don't have any of that office politics to play. I'm blessed that, like I talked about my dog, my receptionist co-counselor is my doggie, who is not going to pull any subterfuge on me. And it feels great to have the control and not to have to worry about my back. And I would, I have worked in organizations before, including universities. And I got to tell you, it's not, especially a guy like you who's, you're on the air. Everybody wants your show. Everybody wants to take. So they're going to smile at Drex. Oh, smile. You don't think they would do anything to get your job? Not anything, but not everybody. There's some very ethical people. I certainly don't mean to tar everybody at KGO at all.
No. Yeah, 99% are good.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But there's always, you're a celebrity, and people are always trying to, take a celebrity's place.
But I understand that that's part of the business, and I understood that coming in. And I think, even your, God, I'm one rung above clown. So, but if you think about the Jay-Z's and the Beyoncé's of the world and the big Hollywood celebrities, I mean, think about them and what the phoniness that they have to put up with.
Absolutely. Look, all the agents and all managers who want to get their money. And how many people would, if you're a producer in Hollywood, you're often going to want to say anything in order to get a bankable star to work on your play or your movie. How much sleeping to the top is there? Study after study shows about, what is it, like 40% of people cheat on their taxes, and about 70% of people have cheated on exams. It's just, But I really want to be. I want to balance this, because there are really some people who are remarkably ethical in the faith. Even if they're not caught, they're the kind of people who will find a wallet on the street, and they will return it and not take a penny. And I think probably the majority of people are that way. So I don't want to go and create this cynical attitude. I just think we need to have our eyes open. That's all.
All right, let's take a phone call. Let's talk to HB in Oakland. Good evening. You're on the Drex Radio Show with Marty Nemco.
I love him.
Isn't he great?
I'm telling you, it is so wonderful. But Drex, I'm not surprised, because you know how you do. You get good people. He has sat there and just told the truth that people don't bother to tell, the truth that they ignore. You have people in the Bay Area that have absolutely nothing that resembles a gut in their body. You're not going to get the truth from them. You don't know where you stand. When you go to get a job, they lie. We don't make the money that they like everybody to think that we do. This man, write 200 books, please, before you die. That's all I got.
Dear caller, could you tell us something that where somebody maybe either lied to you, or even if you'd be really brave, where you weren't telling the truth about something, especially related to the workplace?
I've had that to happen a few times, but I'm very direct and very upfront. And unfortunately, a lot of people feel that I'm somebody for them to fear, and I'm not. I'm just going to tell it like it is. But people are afraid to do that. You have the right to do that. And if the job situation isn't going to, walk away, because you're not going to stay there anyway.
Dear caller, I always like to present, there's always another side. There was a study of whistleblowers who went and complained about this stuff, and the vast majority of them felt that their careers suffered as a result. So it's easy if you're well employed and to say, let's be honest, let's call people, let's call people on their dishonesty. But there's a price to be paid. In fact,
it's not the only job in the world.
Yeah,
I have lost lots of jobs. And when I moved on, guess what? God gave me something better, and I was happier. I'm not going to sit and work for people I can't stand, and I know they can't stand me. I can't be that broke.
Well, you are a very nice person, and I really appreciate your calling.
I love you.
God bless you, HB. Thank you very much. All right. Well, there, we'll end it on that positive note. Don't put up with it. Life's too short.
Doors, it doesn't get better than that.
Doors closed, doors open. All right, Marty Nemco, have yourself a great week.
It's a pleasure talking with you as always. Be well.
Okay, MartyNemco.com. He's our career coach. Check out, I'm serious, everything, anything to do with careers. It's all on his website, and it's all free. It's all free. MartyNemco.com. All right, we're going to take a break and we come back. I'm going to have some fun here. We'll begin the late night, late show wrap up with Charlie Sheen talking about why he doesn't like Donald Trump. And it's not, it doesn't have anything to do with politics. It has to do with a really, really bad wedding gift. All right. This is a lot of fun. Don't go away. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Drex Radio Show. Drex Radio Show. On the next generation of KGO 810.
Well, good night to the longest day of the year, summer solstice. It looks like the sun is setting as we now broadcast live to the entire western United States and Canada and hello, Hawaii. Aloha. Aloha. By the way, so here's what I've got. KGOA 10 is celebrating San Francisco Pride all week, and we're welcoming the Indio Girls to the Mountain Winery on Tuesday, August 9th. Now, tickets are on sale now at the, let me make sure I get this right, at mountainwinery.com, mountainwinery.com. But you can win tickets all week with me. As a matter of fact, keep listening for the cue to call, which will be right now. Tickets are furnished by AEG Golden Voice. So we'll have a little competition. We're going to guess the movie. I like this guess the movie thing. So we're going to play a trivia game. Here is a quick 6-second snippet from the movie.
I made a lot of mistakes in my life. I'm just trying to keep you from doing the same.
Okay, what movie was that? First correct answer will win. Area code 415 outside the bay, 808-0810. Take a listen again.
I made a lot of mistakes in my life. I'm just trying to keep you from doing the same.
I think you should know that guy's name.
Yes. You should at least recognize the actor.
I made a lot of mistakes in my life. I'm just trying to keep you from doing the same.
There you go, Jason. Let's see if anybody can get it right. 808-0810 is the number. Okay, so wanted to just tell you a quick story here. So here's me. I think.
Let it out. Keep it in.
Okay, I wanted to play that for you because I have to tell you, over the weekend, and I was going to do this with Tim Sika this past Friday, and I didn't get around to it. I had this list of the top terminal romance movies. And, for instance, number 5 is Harold and Maude from 1971, Leaving Las Vegas, which I don't remember that being a tearjerker, but 1995. Okay. Number 3, Moulin Rouge, 2001. Love Story, 1970. Indeed, right? Okay. And then the number 1 terminal romance movie was The Fault in Our Stars. Okay. So I was sitting at home Saturday. The missus was out of town at a marathon in Seattle, which was a lovely time. For her, and I was by myself, and it was just one of those weeks. I was, you know what? I love doing my job, but I'm just going to be honest with you. Weeks like last week, and it all started with Christina Grimmie being murdered outside of her venue from The View on Friday, and then Saturday, the massacre at the nightclub, the Pulse nightclub. And it's so heavy. And I understand that that's just our job and that's what we have to do. But sometimes these things, and then to add to it with Orlando, then the 2-year-old little boy gets eaten by the alligator. And I thought to myself, it was driving me crazy because I had it in my locker here. I'm thinking, what was the name of that movie that was number 1? So I thought about it and I thought about it. I thought it's fault something, fault of, fault is, fault. So I started Googling fault. Then I found it. The Fault in Our Stars. It's it was actually a book. It was the 6th novel published by John Green in 2012, and they made it into a movie in 2014. The characters are Augustus Waters and Hazel Grace Lancaster. I don't know who the real actors and actresses were. But anyway. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to sit here and I'm going to make myself watch this. I'm not a love story kind of guy, okay? And it immediately started and they both had cancer, so I already knew what the ending was. Except they turned it around and flipped it upside down. Okay, that's all I'll say in case you haven't seen it. It was incredibly well done. I cried like a baby for 3 hours. And it was the best thing I could have personally done. Better than $600 worth of shrinkage for the next... not that shrinkage. Shrinkage from... Yes, going to see a therapist, okay? I mean, because I'm just... I just don't cry that often, and I, especially at things on television, it's really weird. I think it's one of those, you know, we're all human being kind of things where different things hit us at different times. And I started watching this movie, and oh my God, and out it came. I was just beside myself. And I have to tell you, and why am I, Drex, why are you talking about this? Well, because I think there's really an important lesson, a personal lesson that I'd like to share with you, that sometimes it's things like these that will set us free. I mean, I forgot the endorphins that go along with sitting there crying your eyes out. And... was it about the movie? Yeah, a lot of it was about the movie, but a lot of it was stuff that was building inside me. And we get backed up on those things emotionally sometimes. I don't know. There has to be a release valve. And it also, and I'm going to tell Tim Sica, you know, a very brief version of what I'm telling you now, when I talked to him Friday, but it also reminded me of how incredible, really well-done Hollywood movies can be when they are this way, when you are truly, truly blown away, and I don't know. No, it was more than just the movie. It was just the entire week. It was like, and even personal things. It's just like, you know, I'm going to... And by the way, when I watch a movie, of course, I can can I sit there for 2 hours and 10 minutes on my ass and not stop and get up and go? Of course I stopped. Then I'd start again. So this went on for like 3 hours, you know, and it just went on and on and on and on. And it was so therapeutic. So... the name of the movie is The Fault in Our Stars. And if you find yourself being like me, where you haven't turned that valve open for years. Well, I don't know if it sounded like that. I think it was more like Homer, but it just felt so good. And I just wanted to share that with you. All right, I'm going to take a break and we'll be back with the Late Night Late Show wrap up on the Drex Radio Show. Oh, by the way, let's see if we got an answer for the movie. Let me see here. Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Let's take a listen to this.
I made a lot of mistakes in my life. I'm just trying to keep you from doing the same.
And what was that movie?
Well, that would be Clint Eastwood in Million Dollar Baby.
Look at you. Congratulations. Thank you very much. Congratulations.
You're welcome.
I'm going to put you back on hold. You bet. And we'll be right back.
The next generation of KGO 810. Now, back to the Drex Radio Show. Drex Radio Show.
Thank you for all the kind calls. Drex, you need to cry more often. Well. Now it's kind of funny about the crying thing. You know, for me, it's just sometimes it takes a while. All right, moving along now to the gossipy part of the show, which I love and adore, the Late Night Late Show wrap-up. So word has it that Jay-Z and Beyonce going all, you know, all lemonade on us, bought finally a brand new home in Los Angeles for $93 million. $93 million. It's a it's 30,000 square feet with another 8,000 square feet of open airspace under a roof. So the next time your kids say they want to forego college to break into the music business, Let that kid follow their dream. Turn that lemon into lemonade. You know, and one thing they're not talking about, the backstory to this story, which I have in front of me, is they've been trying to buy a place in Hollywood, I think for at least the last year. And every time they bid, somebody else comes in and has, you know, and outbids them. Well, you know the game, you know that game in this town. It may say 750,000, but you know that means 1.2. So that's what's been going on with them for, I do believe, they just about had a place a couple months ago and somebody came in and just whaled them. You know, not everybody's in show business who's got a lot of money. And that was the case with the last situation. So anyway, I suppose, I would guess that was probably the listing price, or maybe it was 90, and they said, we're not having this anymore. We need a place. So here's 93. Cha-ching. Oh, my God. Anthony Kiedis, why do things keep getting weirder with this carpool karaoke with James Corden? It was brilliant. I played it late last week, but now today, Anthony Kiedis, I guess he said it over the weekend or something, says he saved a baby's life during carpool karaoke. Now, come on. I know that they got out and wrestled in somebody's front lawn. Let's take a listen to this.
After the wrestle-off, we had a dance-off, which led to a very interesting, unscripted moment. We danced off, we tied, and then we were going to celebrate with some Mexican fruit on the corner. And a woman came out of her house holding a child, saying, my baby, my baby, my baby can't breathe. We all ran across the street. The lady thrust her baby into my arms. The baby was not breathing. I thought, I'm going to try to do a little baby CPR real quick, see if I can get some air in this kid. Tried to open the mouth, locked shut. So I started rubbing the belly. Bubbles came out of the mouth. The eyes rolled back into place. The ambulance showed up. I handed the baby over, who is now breathing and fine. And we went back to carpool karaoke. No hero. It was just a dance-off. Ended with a seizure baby.
Okay, well, good for him. Now, I just had to look up his... I was just thinking to myself, how old is Anthony Kiedis? We can't be that far apart. He's 53. Okay, so he did a wrestle-off and a dance-off? Man, that guy's got some groove to him. I mean, I used to love the wrestle-off, but I think that stopped around 30. There were no more wrestle-offs. God, I enjoyed it when I was doing it, though. But that was a long time ago. Then you had a dance-off, and then I saved a baby. Well, let's hear what happened with the carpool karaoke. Can't stop addicted to the shindig. Jump off the stairs, I'm gonna win big. Choose not to life of imitation. Distinct cursor to the reservation. Give it away, give it away, give it away, James. Give it away, give it away, give it away, hey. Give it away, give it away, give it away now. I can't tell if I'm a keeper. I want you to notice how great James Corden is, how he sings right along. Love that song. Dream of Californication. And then in line to see the show tonight. And there's a light on. Heavy glow. By the way, I tried to say I'd be there. Waiting for. I don't ever want to feel like I did that day. Take me to the place I love. God, I forget how many incredible hits they have. Just fantastic. So Flea and Anthony sing a weird song that they wrote when they were 15 and stoned.
We were 15 years old, sleeping on a rock out in the woods.
Yeah.
smoking large quantities of marijuana,
okay,
hiking through the Sierra Nevada mountain range, and we rode Himi Limi.
Himi Limi, up, shut, dup, dup, dum, horn, door, digga, shadana, hoody, loady, hoody, loady, bob, and doo,
stimple, fibber, blick, snort, gorgle, snork,
all of a certain sort, hoody, loady, hoody, loady, bob, and doo,
are you sure it was just marijuana?
No. They were from Cali. It was from Humboldt County. That's where it's from. Let's see here. I'm pretty sure about that. Flea and James Corden sing food. Oh, yeah, I think I played this last week, but I'll play it again for you. Food Glorious Food from Oliver. Yes, the play.
Can't stop the spirits when they need you. This life is more than just a read-through. And mustard. I'm in the mood. Salt, jelly, and custard. Peas, pudding, and salad. What next is the question? Indigestion.
A Red Hot Chili Pepper song, and we would go straight into the musical Oliver.
Oh, I never got to play Charlie Sheen and his cheap wedding gift about Trump. I'll do that next as we continue with the late night, late show wrap up on the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10.